Welcome, folks, to another fan-fucking-tastic episode of RFRX. My name is Eric Wells, and I am the support group director for Recovering from Religion. And with me is Trent Emery, and he is a helpline agent for Recovering from Religion. Good day to you, sir.
And to you as well, good sir.
Trent, would you like to have the honor of introducing our amazing guests?
I certainly would, and I'm humbled. And it's great to have you back, Janice. Thank you very much again for taking the time to do this. So here's a bio. As a counselor and religious recovery consultant with a personal history of religious trauma syndrome, Janice is passionate about helping others understand their losses and embrace their new identity in the secular world. Her own deconversion experience compelled her to develop the online Divorcing Religion Workshop, a six-week interactive workshop combining written exercises and group work to bring together those from diverse backgrounds who are walking a similar journey. In addition, Janice founded the online conference on religious trauma, CORT, in, you know, fancy, what do they call those?
Just say court, Trent. Just say court. An acronym.
That fancy talk.
Thank you, acronyms. We got to have acronyms for everything. This is going to be held online April 29th through May 1st of 2022 this year. Okay. And also the Shameless Sexuality Life After Purity Culture Conference happening online October 14th through the 16th, also this year, 2022. Mm-hmm. Wonderful stuff. So, that being said, I think we're ready.
Janice, welcome. It is so good to see your beautiful face again.
Thank you. You know, I was talking with someone special today and telling them just how delighted that I am to be able to come back to your program. I really consider it an honor when I'm invited to share someone's platform. So thank you for inviting me back again and again.
Heck yeah. So I know that court was really kind of struggling to get off the ground because of this stupid pandemic that we're going through, but you made it happen. I don't know if we've talked to you since it's happened. Janice, how was court that conference last year?
It was amazing. And when I was putting it together, I didn't know if there'd be like 30 people who might be interested. And as of today, so we kept selling tickets even long after the conference because the recordings are all available. We sold over 330 tickets to that conference. What? That was our inaugural event. So it was super exciting. And now I've got all the speakers in line for Core 2022 coming up in just a few months. And then, of course, looking ahead to the Shameless Sexuality Life After Purity Culture Conference, and that's the first of its kind, and we have some very, pardon the pun, we have some very exciting speakers at the Shameless Sexuality Conference. It's gonna be good.
Well, I'm all riled up, and you've grabbed my attention. I want to check this conference out. I was there last year too, watching it through Zoom, and just the guests were awesome, and the discussions were really fantastic. Thank you so much for, and I know this is a lot of work to do, so thank you so much for putting the work in to do this.
It's I love doing it, and it's very taxing at the same time. And I want to offer your viewers a discount if they go to religioustraumaconference.org. That's okay. For court. You can go to religioustraumaconference.org to see what we're about and to register. You're going to click the register or tickets or whatever, and it'll take you through so you can buy your tickets. And you can use the discount code, I believe it's podcast20. And that's going to get is. You a nice little $20 discount.
I'm going to drop that link into the chat. So folks, take advantage of the discount code, please. Well, Janice, we're here to talk about the courage to be yourself. Now, that title is, of course, very attractive. It also feels a little clickbaity, but where would we start with this? I love it.
Well, I've got some quotes here because I know Daryl loves his quotes, but so I've got a good one to start by Oscar Wilde. Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. And I just love that. I think that's so brilliant. I mean, it really says it all. And figuring out who we are starts with figuring out who we aren't. And when we're raised in a religious or high control type home, we weren't really allowed to, we didn't have that option to explore who we were. It had to be, it was in a very confined area. So we weren't really allowed to be curious. We were supposed to be obedient instead. Same with creativity. We couldn't really express that other than, you know, somehow to honor Jesus or who, you know, whoever it was that was being promoted in our home. So if you happen to fall outside of that very narrow view, and I'm thinking particularly of LGBTQ and Two-Spirit, et cetera, folks, and I fall into that category as well. And it was just really hard to be myself. Because I knew there's always this one part of me that was not okay, because it wasn't okay in the Bible, and it wasn't okay. I knew it wouldn't be okay with my parents. I married a straight fellow, and it definitely, you know, wasn't, it wouldn't have been okay with him. So that was just something that I could never allow myself to express. And then, of course, other things like I couldn't be myself in the sense of being a leader. Because women in the church weren't, I mean, I could be maybe lead some women's ministry type things or some children's ministry, but I wasn't allowed to teach males or even really talk, you know, authoritatively at all in front of men. And I was very fundamentalist. I wore a head covering and no makeup, no anything like that. So I really took it very seriously that women were second class citizens. And not allowed to be teaching men. So I couldn't really be myself for a lot of years. And I kept myself in that confined space until I was almost 40. So that's a long time to be living someone else's life. That's another quote I really like.
So just a few years ago then.
Yeah, just a few years ago. That's right. Thank you for that. It's about 12 years ago now. So yeah, now when I see how my life is coming together as I've embraced who I am and I've allowed myself to explore whatever piques my interest and my curiosity, and then apply some of those leadership skills and other skills that I do have. And it's allowed me to develop a whole new career and really be helping people. So I like it. It's working for me.
I like that. I can relate. The small example that personally comes to mind for me is like, I love cussing. I love cussing.
Me and, too.
Yeah.
Damn it.
But my mouth was so clean when I was a Christian. I got to say it had soap in it nearly every month. but when I transitioned out of religion, I really didn't know even where to begin. Everything seemed so scary to kind of get out there and try out, because of this fear of being judged, this fear of still having a possibility of hell. It was really, really scary to kind of try anything new. And also, I think that there was a bit of some habitual mechanism going on too. Like, oh, I'm used to going to church every Sunday, wake up at 6 o'clock, get dressed, but nowhere to go, you know, because I no longer go to church. There's this bit of habit too. I think that was a bit of a mix.
And just a huge question mark. If I'm no longer this devout homeschooling Christian wife and mother fundamentalist that I was, if I'm not those things, because they all dissolved, when I pulled on that thread, that first thread from my doubt, and it all started to unravel, I had no framework left. I had no skeleton or bones left to hang anything on. Nothing made sense. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I believed. I was terrified to make a move because, of course, I'd been taught if you don't believe in the Bible and you don't believe in God, you're a very immoral person. So probably you're just going to be, you know, living a life of debauchery. And certainly I enjoyed my share of I did allow myself to experience quite a bit of pleasure, but it was, yeah, just disconcerting and disorienting, trying to figure out who am I if I'm not that person. And it was also really hard because I had kids. I was still married the time when I started having my doubts, and my kids were just in their teens, early and middle teens. And so they watched me transition from someone who was wound up very tightly with a million rules, because rules made me feel safe. And suddenly it's like, well, okay, I guess all those rules are gone. It's a free for all. Mom's getting tattoos and growing dreadlocks and just doing all kinds of stuff that was, beyond the scope of what any of us were expecting. So it was hard trying to figure out who I was.
Yeah, because I felt my whole worldview was like this rug was pulled out from under me, and I no longer had something solid to stand on. This my worldview was gone. It completely collapsed. Mm-hmm. And not only was I trying to kind of rebuild a whole new worldview, but then I was trying to discover myself at the same time. It was a lot. And for me personally, it sent me into depression for about 4 years. And I've been prone to depression as a kid. Mm. And I was part of the generation that was like, oh, if it's in your head, you should be able to fix it yourself, you weak boy. But
Yeah, I definitely get that. I struggled with depression as well. And also, of course, the feeling of that I couldn't trust myself. And if I did have any thoughts about an alternative kind of identity or sexuality or anything, it must be the devil. And so having to, there's so much that you have to unlearn, in order to get even just to a baseline, just to ground zero, before you could start rebuilding yourself. But there are costs of pretending, like I talked about being just in that confining space where I couldn't entirely be myself, and high blood pressure, high cholesterol, anxiety, irritability, depression. Those things can we're talking, they're, when we leave religion, some of those things happen as we're contending with leaving, but also when we're staying in a place that's somewhat disingenuous for us, we are doing potentially a lot of medicating and self-medicating to try and repress who we really are. And that also means we were having some inauthentic relationships. If I can't authentically be myself, then my relationships, they're not really going to leave room for me to be myself. So it's important for us to figure out who we are and what our values are. And so we knew when we were growing up in religious homes, we were told what our values were. We were told what to think and how to behave and what our values were. My values would have been modesty, humility, chastity, meekness, service, wisdom, like lots of things that just were very, that's what they were. And since leaving religion, I needed to spend some time doing values clarification. And here I'm going to bring up the name of a wonderful guest that you've had on. He's also going to be speaking at court. And his name is David Teachout. And he's so wise. I really appreciate him. And he has a terrific website called lifeweavings.com. And on David's website, he has some great sheets you can print off about identifying values. So you can explore some values clarification. So I named for you some of my former values: modesty, humility, chastity, meekness, and now to look at values that I have, they would be creativity, autonomy, pleasure is a very big one for me now. I'm making up for lost time. I got my nails done, and so that, yes.
You couldn't have your nails done before?
Oh, no. I even have like fancy fake eyelashes that are quite ridiculous. And, wow. And I could not have had those before either, because that was vanity. And now I'm like, bring on the vanity. I'm going to have some fun. If I like it, if it makes me feel good about myself, I'm going to do it. So, yeah, those are some.
Janice, can I back up and kind of make a distinction that sort of popped into my head real quick? So one of the things I was struggling with when I came out of, when I was transitioning out of religion, was kind of rebuilding my identity, which we're talking about here, and then also rebuilding the worldview. The worldview was the easy part. I was able to rebuild that through watching videos, through reading books, through listening to podcasts and articles and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Finding out who I was much more difficult. I actually had to go out into the world. And I still don't really fully feel like I know who I am, but I had to go out in the world and interact with people and try risky things and stuff like that. So I
can
feel like,
elaborate?
So I feel like there was a bit of a distinction between the difference between rebuilding worldview and I just remember the very first time I went to a secular group, I was in the corner sweating balls, like I was so freaking nervous. What if one of my customers walks into this library, sees me there, and the whole world finds out that I no longer believe in this? My livelihood is going to be affected. My wife's livelihood is going to be affected. It's going to be bad. So that was one of the really, really hard for me.
Well, here's something you could try. You could decide you're going to host an international conference on religious trauma and let everybody know you're an atheist. You don't believe any of that religious bullshit anymore. Yeah, that was quite a coming out in that sense. And then as I became more comfortable in finding my voice in the atheist community, then I started speaking out more and promoting myself, promoting my divorce and religion workshop. And then, of course, doing lots of podcasts and lots of publicity for the conference on religious trauma. And, you know, my religious friends, most of them pretty much dropped off. I didn't get a lot of feedback about it, which is good. And I still find sometimes I want to almost not share with those people because I don't want to make them uncomfortable. And so it's okay to have those conflicting feelings sometimes. It's not because I'm unsure about myself and what I believe. It's because I love those people. And I would prefer it if we could maintain some kind of relationship, even if it only is through Facebook, you know, and checking in once in a while and saying, hey, I see your kid had a birthday or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, most of those people are gone now. They're not part of my life. I've had to find and purposely build my own new communities, secular supportive communities. And some of them are around activities like, you know, walking or bird watching or whatever. And then some of them just are groups I've found on Facebook or recovering from religion, your group. We don't like to be isolated. We like to be in the company of others who understand us. So it's important for us to take the time to figure out who we are and then be building supportive community.
Oh no, did we lose Janice?
I'm still here. I'm here. Can you?
Okay. Yeah, got it. Oh, you're kind of coming in and out a little bit.
I'm unstable. You know, it's a surprise to everybody.
You're in good company.
I wondered if you'd ever done any values clarification for yourself, Eric.
Oh, is this going to be one of those talks? Values clarifications.
Yeah.
This is, I know all of those words individually.
Sure.
But walk me through what you mean when you put them all together.
Sure. So when you, on David Teachout's website, he has a page called Identifying Values, and it just has a list of a bunch of things that he considers values there. So achievement, physical challenge, growth, affection, arts, and he goes through the whole, you know, just a whole list of things, you know, what might be important to you. And our values change. They can change throughout our life. Did you have a question?
No, I was beginning to understand what you had meant.
Okay. Sure. Yes. Our values are what matter to us. And that meaning gives our life purpose and direction. So he says, consider different periods in your life. And what values did you have at that time? That can be valuable to look at exploring the difference between then and now. I know one relatively popular exercise among therapists for values clarification is imagine your funeral. You know, you're going to be looking at the eulogy. So who, think of three people who might speak. Who would you want them to speak? What might they say? And then thinking about if you're writing out what they might say, kind of comparing and contrasting that. Is that the life that you're living right now? Or would you like your life to be different? Would you like to be able to express yourself differently than the way those people see you? We're here for such a brief time. This is mm-hmm. it. It's not the dress rehearsal. This is what you got. Yeah. You don't have to spend it living someone else's expectations. You are here to live your own life. And there's no prize for being a martyr. So it's up to you to decide what your values are, what motivates you, what gives you pleasure, what makes you happy, and then build your life accordingly.
I hadn't looked at David's sheet before, a value sheet, until you just kind of put me on the spot here. And I'm looking at it now, and the questions are fantastic. And what's really neat is that the first page is just a list of a ton of different values. Of course, it doesn't list all of them because that would right. be the dictionary, basically. But then the second page is some introspection, some questions like what you had said. Like, what values would you hold important in the past? What values do you hold important now? What values would do you think you'll have in the future? Yeah. And I can see that. We had a joke that kind of cracked me up. And anyway, I can see that how helpful this would be. This is awesome. You ain't kidding, Janice. This is fantastic stuff.
Really, it's good stuff. I really liked a couple of the other things he had written there. He was talking about values. He says values are how we get triggered. And so think of a time you felt a strong reaction and identify what value was being unsupported or violated in that moment. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's important. And you can even think back to, you know, perhaps when you were a child and a parent did something or a sibling and it triggered you, and thinking of it in terms of values. What value did I have then that was being violated or unsupported? And we can think about it today too, because our values may be quite different today than they were when we were living a very religious life.
Hi, I'm Gail Jordan, Executive Director of Recovering from Religion. RFR has been providing hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief since 2009. We have a 24-hour telephone hotline and internet chat, an online community, local support groups, a podcast, blog, and a vast collection of resources. We offer this support at no cost to the folks who reach out to us. 3 years ago, we added a weekend recovery retreat set in the cool mountains of North Carolina. This is a weekend of socializing, learning, decompressing, and building community. Your contribution can help with subsidizing the cost of someone wanting to attend. Please join us for our annual fundraiser on February 19th, or visit us at recoveringfromreligion.org. And click on the donate tab to join our team of donors and volunteers. From the bottom of my brain, thank you.
So let's kind of walk through this second question, and I'm happy to be the guinea pig, Trent, unless you'd like to be the guinea pig.
Actually funny. It seems like an appropriate plug here, but my secular therapist from the Secular Therapist Project had me focus a lot on values. And I found it a really helpful exercise in, well, first and foremost, not only figuring out what those values are, sometimes you don't think about it. Mm-hmm. And it isn't until a moment comes up, like you're saying, where you're triggered or you hear something or you see something or you have just a passionate, visceral response that says, why did I have that reaction? It makes you think about why you have the values that you do. Mm-hmm. And to me, like going back to your first point about your personal identity and, you know, having religion take that from you, something like your values, something that I learned through trying to understand my own values was that there were a lot of lines that ran through all of my life. So your values do change a lot. Mm-hmm. But something I noticed was that I have a common thread. Like I always believed this, but religion made me think that I didn't, you know? And so I think that focusing on that is, yeah, really helpful to, I mean, this I think goes to not just religion and falling out of it, but for you to attach your identity to who you are, as opposed to having to attach it to anything else, have good reasons for why you feel the way that you do about things. So credit again to my therapist for helping me.
Second therapy project. Yeah.
Exactly. But you make wonderful points about all of this. Yeah.
I didn't really give a thought to autonomy when I was a deeply devout Christian person. And in fact, the concept of autonomy would have been scary, and it would have felt incongruent to me because really I was a servant. I was here to serve, and that was my place, and that was where I was to find my delight in serving others. And certainly women are told that over and over again, but men also are told that, children are told that. So the whole concept of autonomy was just mind-blowing to me. And it took a long time in some ways for me even to figure out what I liked, because I was so used to being told what I liked, what I could like, what was really acceptable for me to like as a God-fearing Christian woman. Boy, oh boy, there are a lot of very pleasurable things that never came up in conversation that I know now I really like those things. And now I'm free to pursue them, you know, because they're not hurting anyone else. They're not hurting me. I'm just enjoying it. But yeah, it's worth it for all of us to spend some time examining values, because they do impact our behavior. We typically act in accordance with the values that we have. And it's important also when we're going through our values, not to be judgmental. People use the phrase moral and morality. I hate those words. I prefer to think of it in terms of personal ethics, you know, and integrity. Like, what suits me now? What really fits me now? What do I earnestly believe and embrace? And I don't have any shame about those things. It's just who I am now. It's this radical acceptance of this woman I am at 52 years old at this point in my life. And it's good. It's good to be me.
Wow. This is good. Some good stuff.
Yeah. I've always thought, you know, after exploring values too, one of the things that kept coming up and something that I've been reminded through your talk here too, is that a lot of us not being able to be ourselves seems to come from fear, you know, fear of judgment, fear of whatever. Yeah. Of course, when you believe in God, who will literally fucking kill you for being a certain way, of course you're gonna have that fear. But you have it even if you're just going through your daily life, like you're afraid of what other people will think of you. But one interesting thing in this idea of radical acceptance that I love, by the way, and think is so important and crucial, is that when I look at someone else, if part of my values are compassion and no judgment, right, and if I exercise those values for others, then I ought exercise those values for myself in order to stay consistent. And like you're saying, with your values, and to have integrity in that which you actually believe. So I think it's a wonderful idea. And I wish, I suppose, more of the world carried the philosophy of radical acceptance. But you do have to give yourself, if you're giving it to others, especially compassion, and grace, and reverence.
Oh boy. And you were talking about fear. And I think for some of us who grew up in really fundamentalist type household or high control groups and households, there can be a lot of shame also, that like shaming messages that we received before our identity, just as our identities were forming. So my identity never had a chance to form outside of religion, outside of my parents' very strong, very firm beliefs, because I was second generation. They became religious as adults. They already had their personalities and identities. I did not.
Right.
And so for those of us who are second gen or third gen, whatever it is, it can be even harder, like so disoriented, so disorienting to have to figure out, well, who am I if I'm not? It can be terrifying
Oh, yeah.
not to be part of that group. And when I think of shame, it's important to realize shame is more than a feeling. It's an entire state. It affects multiple systems in our body. Like we'll blush or we'll freeze, whatever it is, it's our affecting our autonomic reactions. And this I thought was really interesting. The fact that the autonomic nervous system is activated by shame suggests that the brain interprets shame as a crisis of some sort. And most likely, so if it happened when we were children, the crisis threat was to our relationship with our parents, upon whom we were completely,
Yeah,
we depended
reliant.
on them for everything. So if we're being shamed by our parents, there's a danger
Yeah.
there to that relationship. And shame is cognitively disorganizing. We can't, when we're feeling shame, we can't really think about anything else. It's very isolating. So one thing I do in my practice as a religious recovery consultant is I like a lot of psychoeducation. I like my clients to be learning about this their situation and the recovery, ideas that they can try to help themselves. And a great antidote for shame is appreciation. And so our parents were not able to maybe reflect appreciation to us. Now we have to do the parenting of ourselves and start cultivating self-appreciation and just appreciation in general, because shame can lead to self-esteem deficits, blaming others, holding on to resentment. It can just really make for an unhappy worldview. And we don't have to stay there. It is possible to move beyond shame. And that's important to think of when we're looking at building our new secular identity. So those are
Let's
kind of my thoughts on shame then.
get a concrete example about that. We're talking a little bit about it abstractly. What would appreciation look like with like I brought this up before. I don't like looking at myself in the mirror. I'm ashamed to have my shirt off at the pool. And I don't like swimming in the pool with a shirt on, and so I avoid pools because I'm because of the shame. So how would someone kind of flip that around into appreciation? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, there are, concrete, in that example, there are concrete things that one could do, if they were committed to it, if there was time, if they were, going to the gym, whatever, it's possible to change that physique. So you're, not struggling as much with that. But as far as emotionally, I think this is also where the practice of radical acceptance comes in. This is you. This is who you are. This is the body that you have exactly today, right now, in this moment, as you're sitting there in front of your computer. This is the body that you have. And there are some wonderful aspects to this body. It's kept you going all these years. You've survived everything to this point. And
Oh,
so you
okay.
may have to be considering other aspects of your body that you can celebrate, and thank yourself for. But really, that whole radical acceptance idea, and it comes without judgments. Just this is today. Oh, I guess this is my body today. Well, if my body is really hot and wants to go to the beach, guess what? I guess this body's going to the beach. And it's a bikini body because I'm putting a bikini on my body. So
you're suggesting I get a bikini. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, there's been some talk. People would like to see that. Yeah.
This radical self-acceptance. Yeah. Radical, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I just call it radical acceptance, but for what we're talking about, because it's also, it can be for, oh my God, this situation that the world is in right now, which is so effed up. But there is a point where we have to practice radical acceptance about, okay, this is the situation that the world is in today, or, oh, this is what my relationship looks like today. And then we have to really take a look at the thoughts that can be flooding into our brain, especially if we're coping with shame around it too. We need to be able to examine those thoughts and try and do it in a truthful and objective manner, like separating the emotion from the thought, if we can. Is it really true? I mean, are people going to look at my body and run screaming? Is anyone going to barf because they see me? Like, because those are some of the things maybe that I tell myself that prevent me from actually getting on with my life and living my life and enjoying it. I'm allowed to go to the pool. I'm allowed to have this body in a bikini. I'm allowed to enjoy it and enjoy myself. And guess what? You're welcome. Like, we don't have to be dependent on how others view us either.
This sounds really close to fake it till you make it, or Stuart Smalley. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me.
Good old Stuart.
Well, it sounds similar to that. Is there something different than that? Or is it?
One of the notes that I took when I was doing some research on radical acceptance, one of the things that they said was, and I think I gave you the link to radical acceptance. We can share that with the viewers. Think about what you would do if you were able to accept blank. So accept what happened, accept your body, whatever it is. Think about what you would do if you were able to accept it, and then do those things as though you had already accepted it. So one thing I do for myself, because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the way I look either. So I love to watch videos and read articles and look at models who are, they don't look like typical models. Maybe they reflect more women my age or women with my body habitus. There's a medical word for you. Just they're shaped more like me. And then to see those people, then I feel more comfortable and it's easier for me to accept myself. And sometimes I get I get dissatisfied to a point that, okay, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to resume my exercise program or my diet or whatever it is. But until such time as I do that, or maybe I won't do that. I don't have to make myself suffer by my thoughts. I don't have to keep harping on those thoughts over and over again. It is possible for me to shift slightly and think in a different way and do some reframing and take some steps towards having a life where I'm not suffering.
This sounds like work.
I know.
What do you think would keep us motivated to continue to do this? Because I know there's a certain amount of time where something becomes habitual, and between the time that you start and that time where the habit starts to kick in, there's a high probability of failure, a high probability of just walking away and giving up. If I recall, it's like 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that. Right. What do you think we could do what do you suggest we do to keep motivated, if that's the right word, to continue to do this?
I have done sort of a vision board for myself at different times, depending on what it is that I wanted to move towards. And then I would have, you know, because I just cut pictures out of magazines about what did I want to look like, or what, this is a good one for values too, figuring out what your values are. Do you want to have a big family or a little family or no family or five dogs or whatever? Cut those things out and slap them onto a piece of cardboard. And so be looking at those things. We can be looking at that and actively trying to figure out, oh, how could I get there? And even thinking about what would my life look like? What might my life look like if I was able to do that? I try and now I don't even just think about what would it be. I just do it. Okay. Even though I don't look quite the way I wanted to look, but my partner wants to go to a resort and there's a pool there or the ocean or whatever. I'm not going to let my displeasure with how I look keep me from doing that, keep me from going and enjoying that thing. But this is different kind of than the identity that we started out talking about. It really truly does take courage for us to change our identity. We have to allow ourselves to be curious, first of all, compassionate with ourselves, non-judgmental. I am curious about this thing, so I'm going to give myself total permission to research and explore. I'm going to watch movies. I'm going to watch videos. I'm going to talk to a doctor or talk to other people I know who have made some of these changes. I'm going to find out. I'm going to lurk in different rooms and just watch and not even necessarily say anything. We can try things on a little bit at a time. We don't have to like dive right in and make a huge grand change all at one time. It's a buffet. We're allowed to take a little bite of everything. And if we like it, we can have more. And if we don't like it, we don't have to have any more. We tried it and we're human and we can decide we don't like it and we can just move on from there. So really practicing self-kindness as well as the radical acceptance, but it does take courage to move from one identity to another, and it happens largely over time.
Yeah, I like that again notion where you have to, if again, kindness is one of your values, right? Practice what you preach, be kind to yourself. And it's hard to do. And you know, you're taught it's narcissistic or solipsistic if you do those things. But another thing that I always go back to in situations like that where you're afraid, right, around, you know, jumping in the pool or something. By the way, there's a great scene in The Office for any Office fans out there where Daryl is interested in this girl and they're at a pool party and he's afraid, he's ashamed of his body, right? And he doesn't want to get in. So she's like, hey, let's get in the pool. And he's like, nah, you go ahead, have fun. And then he sees everyone in the pool, you know, later on, just having a blast, having a ball. And he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I'm not going to sacrifice fun for my own shame and self-consciousness. Yeah. And I think beautiful. It's just a small little scene like that that can speak bigger volumes.
Yeah.
But another thing I think to myself is, okay, well, if I saw someone else do that, would I ever say anything to them that would make them feel bad about themselves? And my answer is always no, you know, or if I have, I fucked up, oops. But if you feel that way about other people, then again, you want to feel that way about yourself. Don't say those awful mm-hmm. things to yourself mm-hmm. if you'd never say them to someone else. Right. And some people would, and I guess that's the difference here, is that some people don't have those values, and I guess that's how you know who to avoid in your life. Like, you know that people say that, or fuck them.
That's right. And when your changes are quite apparent to other people, or when you're, a very vocal person who's always on Twitter talking about how you're not a fan of religion, you are going to hear from people who think you're completely wrong,
right?
Think that they see me in the absolute opposite way. They see me in the way that I see them. They see me as being deceived and poor me, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I look at them and I think, wow, I'm sorry that they're still stuck. They're still entrenched in that. But my self-worth is not dependent on what a stranger
That's right.
thinks of me. I care about what my kids think of me, what my partner thinks of me. And my parents are still religious, so we do not see eye to eye on that whole thing. But thankfully, I've been able to maintain a good enough tie with my mom that we're still, you know, we still love each other. We're still able to connect. Lots of people aren't able mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. But if I was so caught up in fear of displeasing her, I would mm-hmm. never have done any of this.
Yeah.
And I see my job primarily as connecting people with resources. That's really what I'm doing with the conferences. And it gives me such pleasure. And I wouldn't have been doing these things at all if I was so worried about offending or disappointing other people. Yeah. So there comes a point where you have to, you're in this life for you. It's your life. So you get to decide what's important to you and how you're going to spend your time and your resources.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right. And it plays back to me to the notion of values as well. Like, why do you value someone else's opinion that has a shitty opinion? Or why do you value someone, you know, if they're not a good person, why do you give a shit what they think? Yeah. You know? Yeah. So
I like
forget about it. Like, be you, and, you know, unless again, you're hurting people or you're doing something wrong, and then you have to look inward. But yeah, it always rolls back to that for me too. It's like, yeah, you get the choice. You don't have to let anyone else's shitty opinion mean that you are something.
That's right. I got this other quote that I just love here. Be yourself. People don't have to like you, and you don't have to care.
Yes. Perfect.
That's so liberating.
Perfect.
One of the things that's kind of being brought up for me as we're having this discussion is I feel like I was in the habit of just giving up my own desires and wants for the good of the church, the good of the religious community I was around. And so I kind of just left the stuff that I wanted to pursue behind. You know, and I deal with some of that regret too from the time that's been passed. I can really kind of see that now, just how, and it almost became habit forming. It had become habit forming. I'll be perfectly honest, and it's taken a lot of work to kind of get past that and to kind of not let other people's criticisms affect me
and that's part of radical acceptance as well. The whole idea of I can't change anyone else. I just can't. I can't even change what they think of me. I could do all the best, most wonderful things, and they still might hate me or disapprove of me. So I'm not going to focus on that. Some helpful coping statements for radical acceptance, because we're like replacing some of our previous thoughts. I can only control the present moment. You know, that's true. I can only control. I have these hopes and aspirations and what I'm hoping happens in the future with my conference. But, you know, a couple of years ago in 2019, when I was planning Court 2020, along came the virus. And that whole, everything got squashed and sidelined, and I had no control over that. So I had to just accept that I can only control the present moment. Here's another one. When I fight against my worries and negative emotions, I only fuel them to grow larger. So it's more like, yeah, okay, I have this concern. This is a concern I have. Sometimes I even write down my concerns just to try and get them out of my head.
Yeah.
So they're not taking up space there. Sometimes I might share that concern with someone else because maybe they have a good idea that I've never thought of before, you know, how I can resolve a situation. I'm able to accept the present moment exactly as it is. I am. What choice do I have? I mean, I could get in a convoy and I could go drive to Ottawa and like complain about it, but all that, nothing those people are doing, you know, they're demanding the end to all the mandates. None of that is actually going to solve the problem, which is this terrible pandemic. So they're just frustrated and they're expressing that, you know, frustration, but it's not actually doing anything. It makes them feel powerful. Because they, you know, in their mind, they're taking some action and they're in a group of like-minded people. I'm able to accept the present moment exactly as it is. And here's the last one I think is really good. What I'm going through right now is hard, but it's temporary. It's temporary. I'm going to get through it. Even though my life might be forever changed by this thing that I did not want to happen. But the reality is, this thing has happened. and my life is going to look different. That just because life looks different than you imagined, it doesn't mean that it can't still be beautiful and rewarding and happy again sometime down the road.
Yeah, beautiful. Janice, thank you so much. Is there anything else you feel like we hadn't covered?
I've got a couple more quotes for you.
Oh, your quotes are gold. You're like the golden goose who puts out golden golden quotes.
Well, thank you. I've never been told that before. Authenticity is a superpower. Harness it to shape your life. In today's world, it's people are shocked. They're taken aback by authenticity. Mm-hmm. So use it to your advantage. And the last one is a quote by...
Authenticity.
Is this
some people say, well, I'm just telling it how it is. And that's more of like a... I see that more of as like they're taking license to be a total dick or something like that.
Oh,
what would authenticity look like?
In that moment, you mean if someone is saying that to me, if they're saying I'm just saying it how it is, what would I right. mean? My authenticity would be, you know, did I ask for your opinion? I don't actually give a shit, buddy.
All right, got it.
There are sometimes we don't need to say things at all. Sometimes people simply say things to try and get under our skin. Sometimes people say things because they haven't thought it through and they're not intentionally trying to hurt us. And in your own authenticity, you can say, you know, that sounded a lot like such and such, or gee, when you say that, you know what? I'm feeling blah, blah, blah. Is that what you meant? Is that how you meant it? And then you're giving them the opportunity to think about it and to rephrase it. And you're not being a jerk about it. You're not like, how dare you? You're like, did you actually mean to say what I heard? Because sometimes they really didn't. And it's just our own programming that we have. And that's how we're perceiving what they said. So yeah, it's possible to be yourself and not be a jerk.
Perfect. And one last quote you said you had?
One last quote, and I've used it before, but I really like it. It's by JFK. And he said, conformity is the jailer of freedom and the enemy of growth. So you don't have to conform. You don't have to conform. You're allowed to be yourself. And that's it. That's all she wrote.
I love it. Janice, thank you so, so much. I'm looking through the chat and so many people were touched and got out a lot out of this. So many people needed to hear what you had to say. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, everybody.
We have a couple of questions. Let me get down to them. Okay. Trent, I'll take the first one if you don't mind, and you can take the second one. And if you've got questions, type them in the chat. So we're kind of talking about this from within the framework of like a country where it's not a totalitarian regime or we're sort of outside a very controlling cult, even though there are folks who no longer believe and they're trapped inside of these cults. A lot of this discussion sounds like it doesn't necessarily apply to those people. How can one have the courage to be themselves if they're in a primarily Muslim country or something like that?
I think safety has to be paramount for us, and so we always need to consider how safe we are in any given situation to disclose anything about ourselves. Because some places it's a lot safer than other places. And you might be living in that situation and you absolutely don't agree. You don't have anything good to say about that religion, or you're an atheist, you don't believe those things at all, but you might still be forced to practice, to wear the head veiling, or to do the prayers, do the motions. And then I think you're going to be practicing radical acceptance of your situation. you are in a very unfortunate and unfair circumstance where you have to outwardly conform and pretend about these things to save your life or to save the lives of your family. So you have to get to a point where you're okay with that. It's okay. You're doing what you have to do to stay safe. Sometimes we have to do very difficult things in order to ensure our own safety, but you know on the inside what you believe, and I salute you for that.
Got it. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, appreciate that. I've got another one here, which is kind of a curious question, but okay. Do affirmations really work?
I think they can. I think they can if they're realistic. And I think maybe it also depends, you know, what a person is using them for. So you have to, it has to be believable to you.
Right.
So when I say to myself, you know, I can accept this present moment. I know that I can. I have the ability. I don't like it. It might be a terrible, terrible thing, but I can accept it. And in fact, we have to embrace reality if we are going to have any forward momentum, be able to grow and move forward and not get stuck. Because otherwise you're just living in a fantasy. Yeah. So being able to really practice that radical acceptance of reality, it's very important.
Yeah.
Excellent. Trent, you want to take the last question?
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, there was a question I would like to ask too.
Perfect.
I can throw one in there. It was when you were talking about identity, you know, it made me think a lot again about the fear that we have in not being ourselves. There's, in some cases, as was referenced, a justified reason for that fear, and many other cases that fear is not. But I kind of wanted to explore and ask you about what's the danger in tying your identity to anything other than yourself and your values, you know? And we see that now with politics. People can't be wrong about something because they've been so deeply, they've tied their entire identity to their political ideology, you know? So yep. I just wanted you to comment on that if you could.
Right. Experience that as when we're fundamentalists about anything, and fundamentalism invades every sphere because we are human. So you can be a fundamentalist when it comes to environmental issues, nutrition, religion, politics. Those are kind of the main ones there. And when our identity gets enmeshed with our ideology, then any critique of that ideology, we perceive it as a direct threat because it's our identity. And it's like at the beginning of our program when I was talking about how my framework all dissolved. And that is terrifying. That plunges you into existential fear. What if nothing is real? What if everything I thought was ever real is not real? How can I ever trust myself again? Like all these horrible, difficult questions will spring up for us. So people, you know, you have to have all kinds of cognitive defenses and psychological defenses built up to shore up your identity when your identity is attached to your beliefs. So we need to be able to hold things loosely so that if new information presents itself tomorrow,
perfect.
We can release what we thought, you know, what we believe today and to allow for the new information. So holding things loosely and loving yourself always, because I'm sorry, my friend, but you are going to fuck up sometimes. And so you just have to be able to then radically accept that. Whoops, I made this mistake. And sometimes we have to be public about it. You know what? I believe this thing. I believed it with all my heart. I raised my children and demanded that they believed it. And now new information has come to light for me. And I see that it's not worth believing anymore. I don't believe it anymore. And I'm sorry if I led you to believe it as well. That's not who I am anymore. And that is very humbling. And that can be very hard to do. But It's what I had to do in order to move on.
Awesome. Thank you for addressing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts. Eric, did you want to take the next one or you want me to take the next one?
Yeah, you bet. So we've got two more here. How do you handle it when tragedy or illness invites your friends to use your situation to try to draw you back into that religion that traumatized you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I still sometimes struggle with is when I'm scared about something or something very difficult is happening. Like right now, my diabetic daughter has COVID, and it's very scary for me. And I have this feeling of, oh, remember when I used to pray and how good it felt to be able to pray because I believed that there was an almighty God who was listening and actually caring, maybe taking notes. You know, if he was in a good mood, maybe he'd even reach down and touch her and heal her. But I know at this point that that was me talking to myself. Every time I prayed, I was talking to myself. And so on some level, I was able to make myself feel better because I did feel better when I did that. But so now I have a different... now I'll reach out to some trusted people and say, I'm worried about this. And I just need you to know that I'm worried about it. And they can say, wow, that's really hard. I'm sorry that you're dealing with that. And what can I do tonight? Can I do anything concrete to help you out? So I happen to leave religion partly because my daughter got sick. I mean, when a child is afflicted with a life-threatening illness and they have done nothing, they're completely innocent, that to me spoke of a capricious God or a God who didn't mm-hmm. care or a God who was wicked or something like that. So that actually was my exit door out of religion, out of Christianity. So there's not really too much that would draw me back in. But I told the story about wanting to pray just because, you know, I want you to know that, yeah, sometimes that part of me still feels sad, still misses some of those old comforting things, but I have developed new behaviors and new ways of coping. And part of it is also the radical acceptance of what is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Janice. Mm-hmm. Brent, you want to take the final question?
Yeah, we got one more here for you. So having been indoctrinated, says in God's word is absolute truth and salvation, says I'm afraid of being wrong about who I am. Mm. And how can I overcome this fear of missing the mark?
Mm. I think it would be good to take a look at, so what are you afraid of if you are somehow wrong? What are you afraid will happen? Is that person still coping with a fear of hell or, you know, something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting from the question, or is that there's almost like a goal to hit, as in like, this is who I am. It's out there on the side of a barn, and I somehow have to get to that mark. But from what I hear you're kind of talking about, we get to make this up. If we don't like who we are, we can move on to something else. It's really flexible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's also where the values clarification can come in determining what kind of a human do I want to be? Who am I? Am I satisfied with who I am, or would I actually rather be living differently in some area of my life? And again, I think of that buffet. Life is a huge buffet table, and we're able to go just from food to food, trying it out. Do I like it? No, not really. Do I like it? Oh yeah, give me more of this. And we get to decide that. That's not for anyone else to decide. And again, there's no shame in recognizing, oh, I tried something, but I actually didn't like it. Yeah. I guess it's not. And I guess it's not who I am. And that's another reason also, maybe we don't want to dive in with both feet and broadcast immediately, I'm this or I'm that, you know. We're allowed to try things on and see how we feel and go at our own pace. And Yeah, it's good to figure out who you are so that you can live authentically.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. And I find it interesting, too, that this idea of missing the mark, it means that you're being, you know, you're wrong, I guess. But it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be something that you were. I had a friend of mine not too long ago when I was having a political conversation with them. They're like, well, hey, you used to champion free market economics. And I'm like, that's who I was, not who I am.
Nice.
And, you know, it's interesting because there's a line that I think it carries with me. And something I think that we all remember is that it's from a song, a really beautiful song called, and he says, we are what we grow into and not what we were. And I just think that we need to remember that as we go through life and ask ourselves these questions. It's like you're, like you said, creating and recreating your identity and who you are every single day you're alive. And that can change and that at any moment, and it's entirely up to you. And there should, again, should be no shame in having been wrong about that and being a person that maybe you didn't want to be.
You've grown, you know, change is, and even regret is evidence of growth. It means, I wouldn't do it that way again. If the situation comes up again, I won't do it that same way. And so while we need to give ourselves lots of room to grow, we need to also offer that and extend that to other people. Someone might not be tomorrow who they are today. We have to, and that can be tricky when we're in close relationship, if we're partnered or spouses with somebody. It can be hard on us when we see our kids going in directions that we'd rather they didn't go or grow in. But they have to make their own decisions and their own choices and develop their own identity.
Janice, thank you so, so much. This is such a great conversation. I'm going to drop more information about Janice into the chat. So folks, check out everywhere you can find her. Now, before we kind of wrap up, Janice, do you have any final words or final thoughts that you would like to? The whole conversation was awesome, but anything else you'd like to say?
I think really just being kind. Be kind to yourself and be kind to others. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but I think especially as the world continues to be in this topsy-turvy state, there's a lot of things we can't control, but we can control whether we're going to be kind to ourselves and to others. So be kind.
Awesome.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.